to know, about these spaces. I'm going to introduce Arthur McLaughlin, who I first encountered when he was working with Education Scotland and now back in a school setting at Bears End Primary, and I think there's some really interesting work around about the use of digital and social media within learning. So,
My name is Athol. I'm currently principal teacher at Bears End Primary, and I've got some responsibilities. One of them is technologies. I'm going to just talk you through kind of my personal experience of using social media, as well as kind of using it with classes and kids as well. Personally, I'm nervous. Class Dojo, Google WordPress is Twitter. I'm thinking about following on from the 5X risk-based learning, and focusing really on Yammer and how we're kind of beginning to use Yammer as a kind of tool for all the things we've kind of talked about this morning, and how that kind of builds on their key critical thinking skills for moving forward with confidence when they're on the internet and engage with other people. So there's not been any memes or GIFs yet, which seems a wee bit disappointing for a social media conference, so I've got a bit grabbed off. Yeah. Which is there, which is a kind of a summary of what all these different sites are useful for if you're looking through the lens of eating donuts. Twitter, I'm eating a donut, hashtag I like donuts on Facebook, Foursquare, this is where I eat donuts, Marshall, I bought a donut, Instagram, here's a vintage photo of my donut, YouTube, here I'm eating a donut. So, and at its base level, this is somehow how social media works for all of us. I'm sure we can recognise that and what we're doing. And for me, as a teacher, I've been, I suppose, quite new to the kind of professional learning networks that exist in social media, but I've found them absolutely invaluable and just have helped me in millions of ways. These are just a few examples of there's millions of them, but things I use. So on Facebook, there is a primary, Scottish Primary Teachers Facebook site, private group. There's over 10,000 teachers in this who share umpteen things on a daily basis and ask for questions, ask for help, ask for advice, ask for support. It's a fantastic, there's another one as well, and that's the one I mainly use there. Primary Rocks is a hashtag on Twitter. It's a weekly Twitter chat. So there's millions of Twitter chats, but just thought focus on one on a Monday night for primary teachers, and it's a kind of UK-wide one, a kind of worldwide one, depending who's involved. They had their first kind of unconference, I suppose, in March, which I went down to in 2022, so it's these links and these connections you make lead on to other things, and you meet people and go, I know you on Twitter, that kind of classic phrase, and sometimes people walk away from when you may say that to them and you go, okay. But these other spaces that you meet people and engage with people, it's really interesting. Top one is Scott EdChat, which is something you're involved with in terms of trying to get a kind of a weekly chat going in with Scottish education. It's kind of faltered a little bit recently, which is an interesting thing as well about how the kind of how much effort you put into things, but how much you do need to keep things going with these sorts of communities, and you need to keep putting effort into it. So we're kind of working on maybe trying to redo that again after the summer. And the bottom one is a thing called Staff Room, which is a kind of blogging website just for teachers. I found that really useful. There was a kind of a really got me back into blogging. There was an initiative in February to blog for 29 days, which I did every day. And it was a real kind of boost in terms of trying to get me thinking about how I share practice and use these sorts of things as well. Start my own blogging as well. I know John's going to come and talk about blogs, but just that kind of how you share things and how you reflect and how you build in your professional practice and how you find these other spaces to connect with other people, I think are really, really important. So this is someone who I recommend you all follow. It's a woman called Sylvia Duckworth, and she does fantastic sketch notes. And this is one just kind of outline these sort of professional learning networks of where we can find these spaces to engage with people. And so, you know, you can collaborate globally, you can find people, you can chat to people. I think there's different levels of confidence. When you first get into this, you're looking at how you can just get a great resource, well, that's going to really help me in my lesson. And then maybe you kind of ask someone a question, and then maybe express an opinion, and then you maybe get to the stage where you start challenging people. And there's a kind of Twitter acting, there's lots of people out there who are very forceful in their opinions, and you think, well, actually, I disagree. And when you get to the comments where you can actually have that conversation and that professional dialogue, that's when it really comes alive for me, and we'll come back to that later on. So other things on Twitter too, there's things like Teacher 5 a Day hashtags, one I've used a lot. It's great if you're looking for ways to distress and find ways to kind of do stuff outside of teaching. It's funny how our world and the kind of the work-life balance has been kind of hazed over, it's been kind of merged, And you know, that kind of definitive line in the sand between what we do in work and what we do outside of work isn't the same anymore, because it's on our phones, it's with us all the time, it's mobile, it's all around us. Okay, so in school we take I don't use it lightly, but we have kind of revolutionised how we look to communication in school. We're using something called Class Dojo. Now, Class Dojo hides behind a firewall, it's not open to the public. And for us, it's really kind of a behaviour tool to begin with. But what has that transformed for us is a thing called the class story, which allows each class in school to share what's going on in their classrooms. It's like a blog feed. But because we took it on as a whole school, I allowed the whole every parent to become involved with us, and all the pupils to become involved, and all the teachers. Of course, there was kind of scepticism at first, especially from some teachers who weren't comfortable with this and they weren't used to this. They didn't have this practice. They didn't have this ability to blog all the time. But what happened was just the engagement and the way that it brought the language of learning alive on a daily and weekly basis. It gave a real window in terms of what people were doing. You can blog post, you should see some examples here. So achievements, just examples of what they're doing and little videos of what they're doing too. Parents can look at their phones, they can just get a quick update. So that classic question, what did you do at school today?
Nothing. How was it? It was fine.
It transforms into, I want to show you what we did today. I want to take you. So that's a real active participation in sharing the learning and sharing what's going on in the classroom. And it also takes place through, there's a class school story as well where all the parents are involved in too. And you get, so we're kind of very obsessed with data these days, so we get data too in terms of how people engage with it, and these sort of things are quite impressive. But you can see that we've got practically all the parents involved in the school, all the students and all the teachers. So we've got a real community within that model to use. The caveat is, as has been discussed already, about businesses and about business involvement. This is a free, as of yet, it's still free, and that was quite important with us. There are other models like this, and when you get to a whole school initiative, they're not free. So that's one of the reasons we use Class Dojo to improve that. But it has improved. It has improved the way that we share things. It's improved the way that our dialogue. So this is some examples from Digital Learning Week when the whole school came dressed in as computer games characters on Friday, and we've got a wonderful Pac-Man in the front there and an Angry Bird. And we've won over the teachers who were sceptical. Everyone is very, very positive about it. But there is a but. The but is really this thing about likes and this thing about, you know, how popular is something. And you know, we're kind of surfing the wave of popularity. This is doing really well, we're doing great. And a parent said, I'm uncomfortable with that. I'm really uncomfortable with, because she's coming home from school and she's saying, how many likes did we get for this? My piece of work was on it, how many likes did I get? And it wasn't something we considered, and it's actually a really valid point. And I think it's really careful to be careful with all these things about the kind of popularity aspect. And if they're not used to social media, so I'm a primary teacher, we're talking about, you know, 7-8-year-old kids. If they don't have that same culture, maybe experience with it, then you've got to teach those skills to let them see what this is about. It's maybe not about taking it away, it's maybe about informing them about using it differently. The other thing that doesn't happen is we don't have a conversation on it. And that's a shame. So there's no real conversation between the parents and the teachers on it. There's an occasional comment, but they don't really have. They really can look at it and they like it. That's maybe okay too, because the parents are busy, they maybe haven't got time to comment on anything. They usually comment if they see their kids work on it, but in terms of a conversation happening, that doesn't really happen in terms of how it's used. So my kind of mantra is about, from a pupil participation point of view, it's about creating consumers and producers of digital media and social media, and it's about the process, not necessarily the product, where you're trying to get to. It's what you do with it as you're travelling on this journey. So we've switched to a blog website too, and this allows us to share things much more effectively. The old school website was terrible, and that's a banner that was created. We had a web banner competition during Digital Learning Week too, and so it's all about sharing the children's work, but it's a different audience. So this audience is to everyone who looks at this. It's not behind a firewall. So we're getting the children to think about that and asking their thoughts about that as well, what they want to share. And we've got our digital leaders in the school who are responsible for looking at that as well. And once again, we've got data. So we've got data where we need to be accountable to people to show that we've got people looking at these things as well. But one that's kind of slightly ignored, and it's probably because of the way we use another one, is our Twitter feed. We do use Twitter, and we use it for news updates, and we share things that way too. But compared to other schools who use it, maybe as their kind of direct focus of how they share that conversation, we don't use it. But because we're using all these different tools, you know, that brings its own questions about how can we how feasible is it to maintain that long term? How sustainable is that? How many different channels of social media can you actually worthwhile keep? Do you have to focus into it? But the answer to that is we need to do that because they're used in different ways and they're for different reasons. We went on a trip to Loch Lomond. We can thank Loch Lomond Park for their fantastic. And, there's different ways we can interact with different communities and different partnerships, and that's why we need these different social media channels. And different parents use them in different ways too. So we've got to be open to that. So that's one of the challenges. The other thing with Twitter, and I've had a conversation about this before, John Sexton as well about it, is about how different schools use it and about the kind of. Some schools are still putting names of children with the picture, and so being aware of how you use it, and maybe some schools are not aware of the potential pitfalls of that as well. Crichton Largo School is a really interesting one in Fife. They don't put pictures of the kids at all in it. They recently won the Scottish Education Awards for Technologies, but they have a fantastic Twitter feed that still shares the learning but has no pictures of the kids. There's a really good example I've got to put on here, so, of a school down south many years ago that put smiley faces on all the children on their website to block them all out, which is taking it to the absolute ridiculous. But I think we've got to take the children's point of view, and we've got to ask their voice. We've got to say, are you willing for your picture and your piece of work and that to go online? And so they're aware of the audience as well, and not just put it on without asking them. Which comes to this. What I should have said at the beginning, all of my ideas I've nicked from anyone else, and none of them are new. I've bagged, borrowed, and stolen from everyone else. So we're thinking about our goal chart and actually identifying the threats. And this is from someone in West Lothian, and we use it with our digital leaders to think and reflect about how they can use and take ownership of these digital tools they're using through Glow, through other avenues as well. Try to make the five rights framework a bit more primary friendly. So if you're listening, commissioners, there's a wee bit of a kind of work to be done there to kind of transfer it. It's a wee bit. Some of the things are quite difficult to explain to them, so that's a wee bit of a challenge as well. But just in terms of what that means for them at a primary level, there's a conversation to be had in terms of building that understanding too. But it's about us letting go of the reins. Even with Twitter feeds, I think they don't really have ownership. It's not their Twitter feed. They don't have one of that social channel. It's the schools. They share it, they can do things with it. And that's where this, what we're going to call new social media channels come through from Glow, is Yammer, because it gives them their own avenue into it. And for genuine pupil voice. Now, I wanted to bring with me a pupil called Hamza today, and he didn't want to come. I tried to twist his arm by saying there was a free lunch and all this, but he just didn't want to come. But we've been using it in school, and we've just been playing around with it, and really just playing around with it and seeing what we can do with. And it's really, so Yammer is a social media channel through Glow, through the Microsoft apps. It's really like Facebook, and the way it looks, the way it works is like Facebook. You can have your own public groups, you can have your own private groups, and you can share things, you can have file sharing and picture sharing, video sharing, all the rest of it. Currently, I think, right, John, there's over 7,000 teachers and pupils on Yammer. It's a real growing community. And it's a community where the two worlds collide. There is pupils on this, and there's teachers on this, and there's professionals on this, and there's groups that are maybe more professional learning networks to complement how you're using different technologies or different pedagogies in class, and there are groups that are for pupils. Pupils can set up their own private groups. So the way we've looked at it, first we did it through one class, and then kind of begun to do it through a school, and I've sort of taken a step back. One reason has been really busy to do with HMIE visiting us recently, but also to do with just want to see how they used it without being too prescriptive. How do they use it? Well, they use it to share lots of pictures of cute animals, and they use it to share, we'll come back to that a bit, use it to share lots of polls. So there are millions and millions of polls is one way to do it. But the really interesting thing about it is there's lots of conversation that happens. So there's lots of conversation that happens between them and with other people too. We've done it for homework, we've done it for kind of more directed learning in terms of or me directing the learning. I always kind of struggle with the homework thing. I think the homework can be a real off-putting for the kids sometimes, and it really actually puts them off these technologies sometimes. If all you're doing with it is the homework, it becomes just a homework task, and that's a real off-putting thing. The interesting thing about Hamza is Hamza doesn't use any of the social media. He's not on Instagram. So Instagram is the popular social media tool for kids about 11 or 12 years old. He's not in any of these things. But he's taken to it, and he's built on his skills with it. He's got millions of polls. Also, he's taken to it. There's a group called InstaYam, If you get burnt. And he's sharing his photos there, and they're really, and also kind of tagging other people's photos with hashtags, so getting the kind of language and the digital literacy way of using these tools. The fascinating thing there too is that, especially in this group, is the intergenerational chat that happens. You've got teachers, you've got pupils all existing in the same, and I can't think of any other social media channel where that really happens, where they're involved together, having those, you know, those discussions together. So something like the Five Rights Framework, if you want to bring people together from as partners in that conversation, where do you really do that? On, you know, online. And there's the potential to use this for that in a really effective and perfect way. The point of this other slide was a wee analogy to my wee boy. When my wee boy was two, he's six now. I once, you know, we sat down with a set of pens, we're going to do some pictures together, we're going to do some drawing. I thought, oh yeah, we'll do it, it'll be great. And I drew a few pictures, and you do something. And he's doing this with a pen. All you want to do is put the lid of the pen on and off. Hey, no, look, there's this colour, and there's this colour, and no, it's... He wanted to do his own thing. And I think there's can be sometimes a danger in us trying to, because we've, going back to my own experience, I want to model all my amazing kind of learning discoveries, what I use it for. There can be some sort of danger of being too prescriptive how we use these things. And there's a real need to kind of get that balance right between the play aspect with technologies, which I think is always really important, that they have that time to develop it, but also through a safe environment. The important thing about this is a safe environment. It's monitored, there's admin there, there's teachers there to look at it, there's other pupils there to look at it. And because we're coming from a rights-based point of view, the children are aware of these issues too, okay? But I don't know where it's going to go next. I have no idea where I want this to go next. And I'm actually kind of thankful for the similarities, because I need a wee bit of space to think about it, how I want to use it. So, for instance, one way is that there's a fantastic video channel through Glow, and we can add on, a bit like YouTube, you can add on the Yammer feed to it, so you can have a conversation through that, through the different videos we share. I really want to use it as a transition tool, but not a transition tool in the last week of high school before they go up to the secondary school, but from the beginning, so you get those P7s actually chatting to each other from the beginning of the year, sharing things, having challenges, doing it that kind of way, and as a real kind of group activity, so they have that online thing. And so they're sharing that in their own time, and they see this as a useful tool, not just as something they do for homework, it's something that's a bit more embedded in what we're doing in everyday learning and teaching. Another thing is there's a kind of, what, the Twitter chat equivalent is called a Yam Jam. We tried one Yam Jam with some digital leaders, and it worked well. But I think there's a real opportunity here for having, you know, bringing experts on board, bringing other schools on board. We don't have yet access to something called Skype in the classroom, but it's another kind of social media tool to connect pupils with different pupils around the country, different schools, whether globally or just in Scotland, and to see, you know, if you're in an urban school, to see what it's like in a local, in a country school, if you're in a city school, to see what it's like on the coast. Just different environments to bring people together and get a window to the world and sharing their learning. And so learning from each other as well. If you're finding out about something in history and it's not on your doorstep, they're using these tools to really connect with other pupils to share that kind of learning journey too. And there's loads of teachers on here helping each other already, which is really fantastic, helping each other pick up ideas in terms of suggesting things as well. So it's just, there's pockets. And what you find is there's always pockets of social media kind of hanging around how teachers use it and how pupils use it as well. As I say, our pupils are all on Instagram, so that's what they use predominantly, and their mum and dad's Facebook accounts. So this is another silver worth is about connected students, the kind of benefits of it. So things like, you know, practice online collaboration, get used to these digital skills, recognise the power of social media to make a difference, change the status quo, thinking about your digital footprint, so these conversations about what do you leave behind if you post something, if you share somebody else, or if you post, you know, a picture of someone without their permission, and about giving them voice, you know, Article 12, giving them voice, giving them a right to speak, and giving them that chance to have a voice in a different way. This can be inclusive for people that, you know, don't want a, you know, to speak openly, but to speak through the kind of the hidden wall of social media as well, and just making, and also saying it's okay not to do it. You know, that's okay as well. No one has to do these things. And sometimes you might just not be on it at all. You might want to be a break. I think that's also really important. Things about critical thinking skills. Just going to kind of slightly move sideways. So this is just a wee slide that shows how different types of media were used in different elections. So in the American election. So Roosevelt talked about, he used the radio, Kennedy was the first televised live news conference, and Barack Obama was the first kind of social media president or social media election. And you know, looking at their Twitter followers from 2008, from 100,000 up to 63 million in 2015. So the power of these social medias, not just in terms of corporate power, but in terms of changing opinions and the way that we share news, the way we share information, it's really important that children are critical thinkers and don't look at this stuff as, you know, as fact, because this is their first port of call. It may not be in terms of opinions, but even just sharing, you know, a BBC news article or something like that, this is where they look for it. And this is just to show in the last general election how different parties use that in terms of the way that they use it in social media. And so the Conservatives, overall, their kind of social media audience was biggest, which is really interesting. Part of the Green Party, their biggest social media channel was YouTube. So it shows the kind of the different pockets, even in terms of the demograph, how they target and see effective use of social media as well. Which brings me on to this, which was something that came out, I don't know if you saw this story. I really like the story. It was the English Higher Exam, and they came out and they found one of the articles, and it was by Julie Hartley Brewer, which was condemning voting at 16, and it was the day they were actually voting at 16 for the first time, and all of them came out of the Higher Exam absolutely apoplectic about what she'd written, and they all got on Twitter and kind of trolled her a wee bit, got on Twitter and used their critical thinking skills to challenge her. And I just thought, well, that's, to me, that's what I'd want to see. I'd want to see people using that. And they did it respectfully. Some didn't, and she certainly didn't answer respectfully if you go back and look at some of the horrendous. So in terms of how we model that, in terms of how we use that effectively, in terms of how we can hold people accountable, whether it's the media, whether it's whoever we want to use, it's just a really good example of how they were savvy enough to go, right, I came out really annoyed with that. I know she's on Twitter. I'm going to send her a tweet and hold her to account for that a wee bit. Which she didn't like at all. So, yeah, that's me on the left. You've got to know when to stop sometimes. I think that's really important to tell kids. Yeah. Not, you know, you've got to know that it's 3 in the morning. There's only so much professional learning or learning that you can do sometimes. And that thing is, you still just look at one more of the hashtag. And even when you're on holiday. So what do your holiday pictures look like?
As well.
So lastly, yeah, so your digital learning presence is not a footprint, it's a tattoo, so make sure it's positive. So everything I'm talking about is just trying to do things that are positive to model it, but also allowing the children an opportunity to learn those skills and give them that platform to engage with each other, but just to make sure it's positive and that these conversations mostly are. Okay, thank you very much.
I've got some questions there again. Do we have some questions? Again, lots of issues I think draw attention to there. Raise your hand if you...
Do you have to access Yammer through Glow?
No, you can access it through...
So you could have
the
app on the phone?
Yeah, so you can have it. There's apps for any kind of device as well.
So children can just... you can access it at any point, anywhere. So you don't have to log in and have...
At school, we access it. So...
You need to sign in using the
Google
credentials.
Okay.
There's different Yammer groups. So Yammer's a bit like it's a kind of a business tool, Facebook equivalent, but you can use it. So you can create your own Yammer account, but the Yammer Glow one, you need to have a Glow ID to use that actual network, as it were.
But kids can have them on their phone outside of school. Though, I mean, you can participate.
So you can do it online, like Facebook, where you can get an app as well.
Yeah. Because I was going to say, what's really interesting to me is that the university tried to use Yammer and it just didn't work at all, because it was an attempt at communication internal, because they didn't want to engage with any of the other tools, and so it just kind of died a death, or some little conversation taking place, and it's probably because the way it was implemented was problematic. My question was about how complex and kind of nuanced do you find the young people in terms of their use? So you mentioned one of the students who didn't use other things but use Yammer, but in terms of how they float across them. So in terms of, you said something a lot of them use Instagram, but when you in the school when you're using Yammer, are they behaving differently? Are they kind of on their phones? Are they using both?
Pupils are really savvy, so they know straight away if something's educational. Yeah. So there's kind of an educational world, and so Yammer is trying to break down that barrier a wee bit with it, and strike the right balance. Like for me, anyways, at least that's what I'm trying to do. So it's not just seen as something that's an educational. I want them to do it in a good way, so they want to encourage with it. I think outside of school it's really hard, because they are Facebook accounts that have got things that are meant to be, you know, 13-year-olds, and you know, that's the responsibility of the parents to do that, and sometimes that does encroach on issues in school, and there's, you know, that's, it's important to talk about these things. But I think that safe world to create an environment where you can teach those skills effectively and you know, foster good habits is really important.
Okay, thank you very much. Mm-hmm.